The work week is here. Let's begin with your Monday market preview.
Working for it all, but it's money, money. It's money, money. It's money, money. Working for it all.
Welcome back to The Upswing. We're joined by Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist at Annex Wealth Management. Brian, thanks for taking the time this morning. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
Of course. So I saw this in a lot of different places over the weekend, that the MBA is back. I got an MBA years ago, and I think it was a great way to kind of culminate all my experience and learn in a little different environment. But what do you make about the return of the MBA? I think, I don't know, through the years, there's been a lot of questioning on, hey, what's the ROI of the MBA? But is this good news or bad news for the economy?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The last time we saw a big surge in interest in the MBA, the Masters of Business Administration, was in 2008. So that was during the global financial crisis. But that was after there had already been a number of job losses. And so a lot mm-hmm. of more white collar professionals thought that they needed to upskill, that they needed to, you know, improve not only what they knew, but also expand it mm-hmm. as well. So upskill and reskill.
Yeah.
And maybe we're beginning to see that a little bit now. Although it's not necessarily with the same job losses that you saw in 2008. So it could now be more about people taking preventive measures.
Hmm. Yeah, and there's definitely that thought that it's about lifelong learning. So I think that approach is, you know, more front facing than it was several years ago. So, I mean, that could be one of the things on the trend as well.
And one of the things related to getting the MBA is, what is the ROI? What is that return on investment?
Yeah.
And the St. Louis Federal Reserve actually did an interesting study back in 2023 showing that the average person with a college education mm-hmm. makes about 13% more per year over those without the college education, but that it increases over time. So it gives you a head start mm-hmm. as far as that salary, and then also puts you on a steeper trajectory. And so it compounds over time. Now, going from an undergrad to an MBA, sometimes the payoff isn't exactly the same. It's mm-hmm. like the biggest jump is going from high school to college, and then from college to an MBA. But nowadays, more and more people are talking about, well, what about trades? Go
yeah.
to community school. Or community college, and you can actually learn a trade. That might be more what we're seeing in the future, is instead of graduating from high school and going through the traditional four-year colleges, maybe get into one of these occupations, these professions that are going to likely be in short supply.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Let's turn the tables a little bit to tax planning. And we're almost at the beginning of November, and people want to shore up the finances to make sure they're ready to file their taxes in April. What's new on the standard deductions and tax brackets for 2025? And what should people be doing right now to close out the year strong?
Yeah, it is crunch time as far as for the tax planning that takes place. And this is something we do with clients year round, so you don't feel like you're in a rush to do it in November and December.
Yeah.
But the IRS did just publish their updates as far as with the tax brackets and then also with the standard deduction. The standard deduction, it went up. For single filers, it's up to $15,000. For married filing jointly, it's $30,000. Hmm. Keep in mind, that is about double what it was prior to 2017's Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Prior to that, the standard deduction was about half of that. And so you had it where maybe only 69% of tax filers actually took the standard deduction, and now it's up to 86%. So as you've had some inflation, they increase that deduction. More and more people are actually taking that standard deduction. So what it means is you don't get to itemize.
Mm-hmm.
Itemizing, we've actually seen a 5% decline in charitable giving as a result of the more generous standard deduction.
Hmm.
There's less tax benefit to giving to charity. So you do it from the heart and not necessarily because, you know, Uncle Sam is going to be helping to subsidize.
I'd like to think we give from the heart first and foremost, though, but, you know.
And most people do, right? So it was a 5% decline in giving, so it's not like it wiped it all out.
Right.
But,
it,
you know, that worked out to be about $20 billion.
Yeah, that's interesting insight for sure. I want to, I've seen kind of walk in the aisles of the stores, more and more retailers going to digital price tags, and you walk by and, you know, the price doesn't change instantly, but it gives retailers that opportunity to change pricing based upon seasonality, maybe based upon time of day and other circumstances as well. So when we come back, Brian, I want to get your take on kind of the role of dynamic pricing in our wonderful retail economy. This is The Upswing, and you're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. I love Mondays. It's a great way to start the week with money talk. Brian Jacobson, chief economist at Annex Wealth Management, joins us. So, Brian, I'm sure you were out and about shopping over the weekend, and really, like I, you've seen a lot of the price tags or the price markings on the shelves change to more digital in nature. And it's interesting that, I don't know, whether it's Kroger or Walmart, they're all kind of denying they're not doing surge pricing, but they're adopting new technology that obviously enables making pricing more dynamic. So do you think we're moving towards an era of more dynamic pricing in different sectors?
I do. And I think that it's not just dynamic pricing, but also personalized pricing.
Ooh.
If you go to McDonald's and order through the app, you get one price. Whereas if you go up to the counter and order, you're getting a different price. But this is really nothing new. It's been done in various forms. It's just that they now have new technology and new data to do it. Like if you think about years ago, I went to a nice restaurant and it said if you wanted lobster, it was market price. Well, what does market price mean? That was their form back then of dynamic pricing, because you had to ask and it could change as, you know, the supplies dwindled or whatever. But really, if you think about it, all pricing is dynamic pricing if you include your wait time and the inconvenience in the total cost. Like, you know, think about going to Starbucks. They have the same price for a latte, but if the line is really long, you're paying more with your time in line.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as an economist, it's like, well, why not have them charge more and then get that line shorter? But people don't like that. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of businesses are going to have to walk that fine line. They want to maximize profits, but they want to do that over time. And they don't want to engender a sense of distrust in their consumers, where they're like, I don't know, I'm not going to go there because I don't know what the price is going to be. That's not very conducive to budgeting purposes.
Right. Yeah. In a world where, you know, convenience drives a lot of things, we want to know what the price is going to be when we get there. But at the same time, it's not always that just because pricing is dynamic and in front of us in a digital nature, it doesn't mean that it's always going to be more. There are times during the day maybe that retailers will say, wow, we want to drive more volume into the store. We'll actually discount prices, right?
That's right. Absolutely. That's one of the reasons why stores over time, they do sometimes have discounts, right? They have happy hour at bars because they want to get traffic in there during those times. They might have those blue plate specials, right? Remember Kmart, they used to have the blue light special where if something was in, they were overstocked on it, they would discount it. So it doesn't have to be a bad thing. I think that where the Federal Trade Commission, they've actually identified as a priority this what they call surveillance pricing. So it's not about the time of day and maybe trying to balance inventory. It's about charging different consumers different prices depending upon, you know, your information that they have on you. And that's something that they want to make sure that firms are not going to abuse. So they don't necessarily want to have it where, oh, you just got into an accident and you have a chipped tooth, and so now your dentist is going to charge you extra because you're desperate, right? They want to make sure that type of thing doesn't happen.
Yeah. All right. I want to talk a little bit about tariffs. We're talking with Brian Jacobson, chief economist at Annex Wealth Management. So over the weekend, Brian, Donald Trump called the word tariffs, he used the term, the most beautiful word, actually, the direct quote was, it's more beautiful than love. It's more beautiful than anything. The most beautiful word in the world. From an economist's view, do you agree?
You know, I can't speak to the aesthetics of the word, but I can definitely speak to the economics of it. You know, it's a beautiful word as long as you just look at the word itself and look at it in a very narrow sense, but it can have ugly consequences. You know, it oftentimes will benefit a small group while imposing costs on a much larger group and having negative effects over the long term. You know, and there can be legitimate reasons for threatening to use them as a negotiating tool, but they are really a costly solution to any problem that they're supposed to fix. There's usually a cheaper and a more efficient solution. It just requires, I think, getting to the root of the problem to get a better solution. They can lead to higher consumer prices, lower economic efficiency, strained international trade relations. So they're one of these things where I wouldn't just be, you know, kind of throwing them out there as being a what we would call a panacea, where it's, you know, designed to cure everything that ails you.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's election talk for sure. I mean, Joe Rogan asked Trump, would he consider replacing income taxes with tariffs, and Trump responded, yeah, sure, why not, and proceeded to argue that the U.S. was the wealthiest when it had strong tariffs in the late 19th century. So,
yeah, I think we're a lot wealthier now than we were then.
Yes.
You know, I'd much rather live today than back then because, you know, I like flush toilets.
That's right. Indeed. All right, so what's coming up for the week ahead? What's on the market watch for the week? Any major things to note?
Yeah, the biggest thing, so tomorrow we get job opening and labor turnover statistics data. That's really interesting about the health of the labor market. Wednesday, a first look at gross domestic product numbers. And then Friday, we get the employment situation report. That's always a big one as far as how many jobs are being created and destroyed on net. We had a lot of hurricane interruptions, though, unfortunately, that's going to distort these numbers.
Yeah, and it all goes back to consumer confidence. Quickly, Journal Sentinel Restaurant Critic is coming up next. What's your favorite restaurant in the area, Brian?
I love the Costco food court.
Oh, love it. All right. Spoken like a true economist right there. Brian Jacobson, Annex Wealth Management. Brian, enjoy the rest of the week.
You too, my friend. Thanks.
All right.